Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
All right, everybody. However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash and live on the Take It Easy YouTube channel, also known as the Comical Sports YouTube channel, but whatever it is, thanks for stopping in however and whenever it is that you are stopping by here today. We've got a great show planned for you today. We are coming right down to the very, very end of the NBA playoffs. By the time we join you next week, we will know exactly how the NBA finals are shaking out. And yesterday, by the way, everything just got turned over. All of a sudden, everything got turned over without a hint or without a pre-warning. The NBA playoffs turned on its head with Giannis Antetokounmpo getting injured and the Atlanta Hawks bringing that series back to a 2-2 tie. All of it was just absolutely, you know, just mind-boggling. It was numbing. We talked about that today on the Take It Easy podcast, which you can check out right now over on the Take It Easy podcast links, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get podcasts. You can check out the Take It Easy podcast as well, because it was really crazy to see that play out. And, you know, Giannis is in the background, but I feel like a lot of that would just be rehashing things that we've already talked about on the podcast. So obviously Giannis is the big story right now. That injury just totally changes all the math on what we're seeing right now in the sport. And it might lead to the Hawks getting to be the benefactors. And unfortunately, well, also within the next hour, we might get the news on what happened to Giannis and whether or not he might be in or out of the next game. Maybe we'll get that within the next 50 minutes or so here on the Take It Easy radio show. We'll get some news on Giannis that we can break into. But if you want some of the perspective on that, I feel like I've talked about it for like a couple hours already. So we're going to do other stuff here today, which might include some Major League Baseball, because Game 6 is tonight between the Clippers and Suns. But in the meantime, you can watch a lot of Major League Baseball right now, like the St. Louis Cardinals beating up on the Arizona Diamondbacks, or the Cubs and the Brewers having just a high-scoring bonkers scoring fest early on. 7-6 is the score right now. That one's like in the fourth inning. And do not watch Pirates and Rockies under any circumstance. There's no circumstance where anyone should be spending their Wednesday afternoon watching a Pirates and Rockies game. So that game is also going on right now. We'll tap in to all of that stuff throughout the afternoon here today, as well as the Washington Nationals, who have been a fun story recently in baseball. For people who haven't been paying close attention to Washington, something funny has been happening with them, where Washington has gone on this crazy win streak. They're not really that good of a team. They won't make the playoffs, no matter how many wins in a row they get. They won't end up making the playoffs this year. And Washington went from like the last place team in a terrible division. Just the NL East has been terrible this year, and I don't understand why the Braves aren't better. A big part of that is like the decline of Marcell Ozuna and Freddie Freeman, the MVP of the league last year, definitively not being an MVP this year. So there, like, there's explanations behind it, but their success has created like a power void at the top of that division. And so all three of the best teams in the National League happen to reside in the National League West, including, for those who are only on radio right now, you can't see me pulling out my Fernando Tatis jersey and my San Diego Padres. Rep the 619 all the way through. I got to go to so many of those games over the past few days, but yeah, it was fun being back in San Diego for a little bit. And yeah, the Padres are one of the best teams in the National League, and so are the Brewers and Cubs, despite the fact that the Brewers have the lowest batting average in baseball and one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. They traded for Willy Adames from the Rays. So for those who don't know, Willy Adames was like a fan favorite during that postseason run last year for the Tampa Bay Rays when they went to the World Series. And knowing that Wander Franco was about to come up, I had assumed this offseason that, you know, Willy Adames was going to get traded to the purgatory of baseball and go to like Baltimore or something, to a team that wasn't very good. Because as great as Willy Adames was, he's better defensively than he is offensively. And Wander Franco plays the same position as him. He's the number one prospect in baseball who just made his debut and is getting everyone excited. In fact, we can watch Wander Franco bat right now. Yeah, Wander Franco is going to be up third here for the Tampa Bay Rays against the Washington Nationals. So we'll come back around to that as well. But anyways, to that point, they moved Willy Adames to the Brewers, which, you know, the Brewers are pretty good because they've got an awesome pitching staff, which is funny because when the Milwaukee Brewers were trying to win the World Series back in 2019, their pitching staff was terrible. Like, their offense was carrying them through the playoffs and ultimately within one game of the World Series before Yasiel Puig ripped my heart out. As an anti-Dodgers fan, he ripped my heart out with a home run in Game 7 to send the Dodgers to the World Series. What was that, 2018? That happened 2018, so 3 years ago, not 2 years ago, 3 years ago the Brewers were going for that World Series run, and then they lost in the wild card to the Nationals. Just a, you know, they had the lead, brutal finish. Then they were the 8 seed last year, lose to the Dodgers. Now they've kind of retooled with just a terrible offense and minimal production from Christian Yelich, and Willy Adames is now their 3-hitter, despite the fact Willy Adames, who's been an awesome acquisition, like he's hit close to 300 since coming to the Brewers over a month ago. But despite that fact, like, Willy Adames has just been like just not good offensively throughout his career. And the fact that he's the number 3 hitter for just a not good Milwaukee Brewers offense. But the Brewers are still first in that division right now. So, you know, shout out to the Milwaukee Brewers for that level of success they've had so far in the season. So that's what's going on in the baseball world. We're also filling some time so we can watch Wander Franco. So we'll stay on the baseball for a little bit. John Lester's pitching, by the way, for the Nationals. How about John Lester? John Lester used to be like the most famous baseball player for the Boston Red Sox. Then he was on the Cubs and he became this like lovable figure, even though like he's got a kind of icy personality and a dry sense of humor. Like, John Lester kind of became that guy. And then now he's just kind of hanging out for a mediocre Washington team. And this is kind of how a lot of players age out of the sport, right? Like, Nelson Cruz was kind of going through the same thing. Like, after Texas and those great teams that he played on, he was on the Mariners for a while. And then he went to the Twins. And the Twins, you know, made a couple playoff appearances. And he showed up in some All-Star games. But, you know, ultimately it was a little disappointing for Nelson Cruz, and now Nelson Cruz might get traded again at like 40 years old, and he might still have value on the open market as Manuel Margot, former San Diego Padre, smacks a single in the right field. And it was so sad to see that for Nelson Cruz, because it's like, this is how guys age out. This is how people who were at their best in my youth, I mean, I'm not, you know, it's a different generation of stars now. Like, there's a generational turnover every 5 years. And so John Lester, who kind of came of age two generations ago, dominated in the previous generation with, you know, world championships for the Red Sox and world championships for the Chicago Cubs, two of the most cursed franchises of before my lifetime. But at the same time, Manuel Margot swipes second base, and he's going to take off for third as the ball gets away. So nice little double steal for Manuel Margot, manufacturing runs for the Tampa Bay Rays. Margot's so fast, man. He's improved quite a bit since he was on the Padres, and he's a little bit of a platoon guy now. But, man, Manuel Margot, I feel good to see him have some success now with the Tampa Bay Rays, even if the Padres just got an eighth-inning guy for him. Anyways, so to John Lester's point, like, and the same thing's happening in the NBA. Like, maybe this is a segue to the NBA after we watch Wander Franco bat now with a chance to drive in some runs. But Randy Arozarena is going to line one to center field. Parra catches it, fires home, no play. Manuel Margot is going to score the first run of the game for Tampa Bay. And now we get a no on, one out, Wander Franco at bat. The number one prospect in all of Major League Baseball. Can't miss, surefire guy. Wander Franco is coming to the plate here on the Take It Easy radio show. Obviously delayed so that we don't have any issues with, what's it called, disseminating, I don't know, whatever they say. Obviously we're on quite a bit of a delay. Franco, strike one. And so John Lester's now, this guy's like aging out of the sport, like removed from his prime. Now for a media, it's the same thing with Kyle Schwarber. Like, Washington actually just has a lot of these guys. It's like Lester, Josh Bell, Kyle Schwarber, Gerardo Parra. Like, Washington's got a bunch of these guys on their team of just dudes, like, aging out of their primes. I think Starlin Castro is still there. Yeah, he's playing third base for them. Jordy Mercer. Like, these dudes are just aging right out of the sport. And they're all on Washington for some reason. And then that complement of young – Strasburg's another one also. But that complement of young stars like, you know, Trey Turner, Juan Soto, all those guys. 1-2 to Franco, inside 2-2 count to the Tampa Bay Rays golden child number one prospect. So, yeah, Michael Wacha, by the way, is the starter for Tampa Bay today. But to that point on the aging out of the sport, Franco grounds one over to shortstop, or second base Mercer, into a shift, actually. So the second baseman Mercer fields it, and Jordy Mercer throws out Franco for the first out of the inning. So now we can do that transition I was about to say over to the NBA, where the NBA has going through that generational shift. And Giannis is at the forefront of that because he is the face of the generation that is coming of age right now, right in front of our eyes. And obviously that injury changes everything. And it's, as I talked about today, and I guess I didn't dig deeply into that on today's podcast, so we can take a quick minute to talk about this idea that this was like the last possible moment Giannis could have gotten hurt and the Bucks still not make it to the finals. If this were a 3-1 series and Giannis had gotten hurt in game five and the Bucks are up 3-2, and I think Milwaukee can still advance to the finals because they just have to win one game in two tries. The fact they have to win two out of three, even without Trae Young on the other side, even if you have, you know, two all-stars, Chris Middleton being the best player on the floor, regardless of who's playing, I think the inconsistency kind of hurts him, but you know, I mean, the internet was kind of cruel to Chris Middleton around that, too. Like, I would just like to say they were kind of cruel to Chris Middleton. But at the same time, what I wanted to go to with that is I don't trust the Bucks. I mean, the series is up in the air, but now it feels like a 9 seed versus like a 7 seed. And that's kind of unfortunate, you know, that we have the Chris Middleton is the best player left in the Eastern Conference Finals, and in the Western Conference, it was Devin Booker for a while. Like, it's just unfortunate that injuries derail, you know, what we're used to seeing, which is like, he got this battling it out in the final few rounds. Like, that's the payoff of all these playoff rounds is you get Giannis dueling it out in the finals or in the conference finals or whatever you want to call it. It's unfortunate. Oh, Yandy Diaz just launched one. Oh, Yandy Diaz just launched a home run for the Tampa Bay Rays. 2-0 Tampa over Washington. Oh, my Lord. He just launched a home run right there. Oh, my gosh. 424 feet dead left field, was about four rows away from hitting it to the concourse. Oh, my Lord. Just crushed it from John Lester. Ooh! Absolute tank by Yandy Diaz. Absolute tank. So, anyways, back to the point on Giannis is that this is the last possible point. It just sucks. Like, it's going to be a close matchup. It might go seven games, but it's not the same type of seven games. It's seven games where you know that, well, under normal circumstances, whoever wins is going to get bounced in the next round. And it's not like the peak of basketball. It's a series that would be a first-round seven-game series, which is, you know, it's always interesting to have seven games. The storylines are fantastic, but it's not a memory that we're going to remember for a lifetime. And unfortunately, the Giannis injury is just going to, you know, it's going to hurt a little bit that way. And so, I don't know. It's been, like, numbing for a while, and, you know, Giannis, we're still waiting to hear what the end result is of this injury as you just wait and wait and wait to see if the MRI reveals anything. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. And, you know, some of it's come around, and we talked about it a lot today, and I said we weren't going to, you know, do a ton of the Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, analysis at this point. And, you know, hopefully there is some good news around the Giannis thing and that he'll play in game five. But I mean, it's an injury though. You just watch it on the floor and you're just frozen. And it's unfortunate because it changes all the math around this series. There we go. Here is the exactly what we were talking about. We got the breaking news here on the show. Adrian Wojnarowski: there is no structural damage to Giannis Antetokounmpo's left knee after his awkward landing last night in Atlanta. Ligaments are sound, sources tell ESPN's Zach Lowe. Timetable to return is unclear. So Giannis is going to be all right, and that makes me happy. Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be all right. At the very least, he might have to sit out. Like, there's no structural damage there's no structural damage where it's like a torn ACL or something. But fortunately, Giannis is going to be okay. Oh, there is no structural damage to Giannis Antetokounmpo's left knee. And we're waiting to see what's going to end up happening from this point forward. That changes the math on some of this stuff. Giannis Antetokounmpo going to be all right. And unfortunately, it had to come, you know, after they're now 2-2 and they kind of need him to come back. He doesn't get like that week off of rest or something. Part of it is because they came out flat-footed, but I think they got outscored by like 16 points after Giannis left or something, or 15 points to end the game. So I think no matter how much they had beaten up on Lemon Papaloo and Onyeka Okongwu, who shot 100% from the field in the first half, both of those two combined. And I think regardless of how that one turns out, I think Giannis was going to be needing some time off there. I think the Hawks are going to win that one. So that's a 2-2 series, and game five means that much more. And I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for that amount of intensity that we're going to see with Giannis. And I'm just not ready for the Bucks to have. I mean, sure, it's going to be cool to see the Hawks win something now, but it's none of it makes sense. Like, I was the mayor of Warriors South for years and years. I love the Atlanta Hawks, but also, like, none of this makes sense. The fact that the Hawks are here this fast doesn't make any sense. And what makes it, you know, three times worse is that we know that the Philadelphia 76ers were a better team than the Atlanta Hawks. We watched the series, and the Philadelphia 76ers were a better team than the Atlanta Hawks. And they ended up losing the series. And so it's, you know, like double, it's a double frustrating standard because you love the Hawks and you've seen Giannis put in the dues to get to this point. But Trae Young, you know, he's not a superstar by any stretch of the imagination, and they should have been bounced probably in the first round against the Hawks. Or, I'm sorry, against the Bucks. The Hawks wouldn't get – the Hawks were supposed to play the Bucks in the first round, but the way seeding turned out in tiebreakers was they got the Knicks and the Heat got the Bucks. And ultimately the Heat got, you know, crushed pretty quickly by the Bucks. But it just felt like the Heat were a team destined to face – like the Heat were a better team than the Hawks, or at least further along in their progressions. Like Jimmy Butler is a better player than Trae Young, not by much, but, you know, they're – both perennial all-stars. Jimmy Butler, when healthy, you know, we saw what he did last year. Him and Trae Young are the same caliber players. Bam Adebayo is better than anyone on the second best player on the Atlanta Hawks. He would be the second best player in the series. So, you know, they felt like an even matchup, and both of them could have gone up against the Sixers. Obviously, the Hawks ended up winning, but the Miami Heat were coming off the finals, and it was like, yes, this is their peak. But anyways, it didn't work out that way in the seeding. And now the Hawks are here, and it's exciting that the Hawks are here. We spent like 40 minutes last week talking about the Atlanta Hawks, and it just feels so surreal that all these people keep dropping and the Atlanta Hawks end up being the ones at the top of the mountain, even losing Trae Young, even while losing their one all-star. The roster after that just looks like a nine seed. Like Trae Young being out means Lemon Pepper Lou and Onyeka Okongwu and Bogdanovich and Gallinari are going to go. That sounds like the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Sacramento Kings put together. Like, it's so strange that this team is this good. It's so weird that this is how it's played out for the Atlanta Hawks. And for the Atlanta Hawks, it's interesting because they keep, you know, staying alive. And maybe the Bucks will come together and win game 5 and win game 6 and get Giannis to the finals. But it's not like it's a major accomplishment like it was like the Clippers beating the Utah Jazz in back-to-back games where we were both just – or in both of those games, we were just kind of like floored that Paul George and Terrence Mann like knocked off this really deep team that, you know, we'd been doubting the Utah Jazz all year. We said they were a second-round exit in waiting. But after you lose Kawhi Leonard – no one expects that the Clippers are going to end up beating the Utah Jazz after that. So it was so weird. And, you know, that one was truly shocking. But if the Bucks beat the Hawks, like, without Giannis, is it that crazy of an accomplishment? Because the Atlanta Hawks were, I mean, short to say, the Atlanta Hawks are not, like, more than the Pacers right now. You take Trae Young off the Hawks, they're basically like the Indiana Pacers. So I don't know exactly like how magical of a success story that is, but it just, none of it makes sense anymore. And part of that is the anger towards Giannis and not having the words to describe just how angry that makes me. Because Giannis Antetokounmpo was right at the top, right at the physical peak of his game. Giannis's thing is just, it's unfortunate, but we do have the information that there is no structural damage for Giannis Antetokounmpo and that he may end up being back. At the very least, he's going to stay healthy. And that is the biggest part of it is that this is not like, okay, we know it's over. It's not like there's structural damage or a partial tear or anything like that. It's just Giannis is hyperextended and no timetable for a return, but it might be possible. Just might be possible. Who knows? We'll find out. So do we want to do the pregame style show for this game tonight? All right, let's see if we got any cool sound effects here. Let's see.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get
there you go. nice sound effect to transition out of that right now. So game six, Clippers and Suns. Let's check out the gambling odds on this one because I'm interested to see where they're behind. Because, from a psychology standpoint and a momentum standpoint, and momentum is obviously like a strange thing because analytically you can't grade momentum. The meaning of momentum is the same concept of choking or being clutch. There is no such thing as clutch, but there is such a thing as like choking where, you know, when we're under stress and we're under pressure, we cannot perform at the best versions of ourselves, whether that's being, you know, in a job, in a sport, in a relationship, whatever it is, we just as human beings do not operate well under stress. We cannot be the best versions of ourselves unless we are relaxed. And this is where the idea of stress and comes into play, where when you're stressed, when you're tired, and you're not at the most peak version of yourself, your performance declines, or at least your performance should decline. And sometimes that can be mental, and sometimes that can be physical. And so this is why game five, when you're down 3-1 in a series, when you're down 3-1 in a series, game five, game six, and game seven become must wins. Like you can say, you know, we take it one game at a time, but ultimately every game, your season's on the line, and you have to win all of these games. It's why we were watching the Washington Nationals earlier. When the Washington Nationals won the World Series in 2019, they broke the record with like six or seven elimination games where the Washington Nationals were down in the game and came back to win. It's that, I mean, you can take it one game at a time mentality, but ultimately you have to win 2-3 games in a row. If it's a 3-1 series, you have to win 3 in a row. If it's a 2-1 best of 5, you have to win 3 in a row or 2 in a row. If you're 3-2 best of 7, you have to win 2 in a row. It's that mindset playing itself out. Obviously, there's the old school cliche of one game at a time, one step at a time. You can only get from A to Z by starting at A. But anyways, that was just a long-winded way and time-filling way to say, as I pulled up the gambling odds for tonight's Suns and Clippers game, Game 5 in a 3-1 deficit is always the hardest one to win. Game 5 is always the hardest game to win. So here's the first case. In most of these circumstances, the team with the 3-1 lead is the higher seed. So in the current NBA, MLB, NHL playoff formats, the series go two games at the lower seed, 1-2 for the better team, 3-4 for the worst team, 5 at the home, 6 on the road, and 7 at home for the good team. So for the team that's the better seed, in this case the Suns, 1-2 in Phoenix, 3-4 in Los Angeles. And this can apply for any series, but let's just do it under the Phoenix Clippers one to make it easier, because I realize that it's difficult to convey better team, worst team, because technically the higher seed has the worst record, because like 4 is higher than 2, but 2 is the better seed. So anyways, most circumstances, I'd say probably 80%, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'd say rough estimate about 80% of 3-1 leads are the team that is better up 3-1. Might actually be higher than 80% now that I think about it. The team that is better, the Suns in each of their series who hosted games 1-2 are better than the other team. So they typically have the 3-1 lead, which usually means game 5 is played the home venue of the better team. Or in 80% of the circumstances, the team that's up 3-1 hosts game 5. So game 5 is on the road for 80 to 85% of teams that are down 3-1. That becomes the hardest game because game 6, you play on your home court. Hence the fact that the Phoenix Suns were 4.5, and that gives you usually a 3-point swing. So the Phoenix Suns were 4.5-point favorites against the Clippers, 5.5-point favorites, according to this website that I see here. 5.5-point favorites in Game 5, and they're 1.5-point favorites in Game 6. Theoretically, the only thing that has switched back and forth is the home venue. And in football, they usually say about 3 points swings it both ways. You get 3 points if you're on your home field. In basketball, I assume it's a little less because the home court is less prominent in basketball than it is in football. If I remember my scorecasting, I believe home court in basketball is less advantageous than home field in football. But that might be incorrect. It's been a little while since I've read the scorecasting book. But anyways, to the point, now Game 6 is on your home floor. So theoretically, that would be easier than Game 5 because you have a better percent. It's not a 50-50 equal, like 50% of the time you win on the road. I think it's like 57% in the NBA. The home team wins 43% of the time. The road team wins. So it's slightly easier to play on your home floor. Game 6 is your one on the home floor. And by Game 7, a lot of the momentum has shifted. And Game 7 is a one-game sample size that's totally random, and each circumstance matters a bit more. So Game 5, always the hardest one to win. Which brings us to the gambling odds for today, which says, according to the spread, which Phoenix is a 1.5-point favorite, 66% of the money is on the Phoenix Suns, and that line is moving way up. It is, everyone is betting on the Suns. Everyone is betting on the Suns. The line started as the Clippers at 1-point favorites, which would make sense now if it's a 3-point swing. So 5.5 points in favor of the Suns to 1 point in favor of the Clippers. So 3-point swing for being on the home floor, 6 points total. You go from being in Phoenix to being in Clippers, that's a 6-point swing for moving to the home floor. But the line started at 1 for the Clippers and has moved up to Phoenix is now favored by 1.5. So the line has moved 2.5 points in favor of Phoenix, and which means Vegas is trying to get closer to the even 50-50 splits. Yet, 66% of the public is betting on the Suns, and 70% of the money line, which is minus 120 for Phoenix and plus 102 for the Clippers tonight, the money line is moving towards the Phoenix Suns at 70% with close to 50-50 odds. Like if a team is minus 300, Vegas is incentivized to take more of those bets to counteract the other team winning, which is what happened last night with the Hawks, where Vegas lost a bunch of money on the Hawks because Vegas lost a bunch of money because the Hawks won outright. But they hedged on that because like 70-something percent of the bets came in on the Milwaukee Bucks. So the Phoenix Suns are getting a ton of bets from the public. And Vegas is hedging a bit. So Vegas is not totally confident in the Clippers. But with all of the amount of people betting on the Suns, Vegas is willing to invest in the idea that the Clippers can win this game. It's the reason that they're moving the line that the way they are, but still 66% of the bets are on Phoenix for the spread and money line, which is only a slight difference. They're pretty close. They're not exactly equal, but they're pretty close. It's minus 120 and plus 102. It's about as close as you're going to get to 50-50 on the money line. They're taking about 70% of the bets. And so for Vegas numbers here, just for a quick explanation, Vegas is always incentivized to try and get 50-50 on both sides. Vegas wants to get 50% of the bets on both sides because it means they're going to break even either way. And Vegas has algorithms and equations that help them determine, the same way that professional sports gamblers have algorithms and equations that take into account like weather patterns and, you know, which person is playing at which time and what is the court going to look like beforehand, all this crazy algorithm that they have that I don't understand but just know that it exists. Vegas has some sort of advantage where they will take more money on one side and bet against the public because if more people lose, they make 40% tonight, per se. So if the Clippers win at plus 102, they walk away with about double what they had. So let's say 70%. So let's say $7 million are bet on the Suns and $3 million are bet on the Clippers. If the Clippers win, they pay out $6 million in bets. If the Suns win, they get to pocket all of the Clipper money. And they, if the Suns win, they have to pay out about $7 million. Let's say break it even, $6 million. They have to pay $6 million out and only took in $3 million from the Clippers. So they would lose $3 million if the Suns win tonight in this theoretical equation. So they would lose 30% if the Suns win. If the Clippers win, that means they would pay out, let's see, plus 102, they would pay out $600 back the other way. Or I'm sorry, they would pay out $300 the other way because they, or not 300, $3 million. $3 million the other way. So they would double everyone's money because it's plus 102. They double everyone's money, but they pay out $3 million, but they made $7 million from all the people who bet on the Suns and lost. So Vegas is betting $3 million of their own money on, I mean, whatever the sportsbook this is. I don't know exactly. Oh, by FanDuel. Sorry, FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel is betting on $3 million that they're betting right now by the money that they've taken, whether by chance or not, like if tons of people are betting the Suns, there's some weird cases like Alabama football where they can set the line at anything and everyone's going to bet Alabama and Alabama's going to cover every spread. It's just a losing proposition for Vegas. FanDuel Sportsbook, because it's technically not Vegas anymore. It's just FanDuel, which anyone can use. FanDuel is betting $3 million on the Clippers tonight to win $4 million. That's what they're betting tonight. If the whatever their valuation is, they have the confidence to say they will bet $3 million on the Clippers in order to win $4 million. And they've hedged their bets in other places, like over-under is 52% over, 48% under. So, you know, they're playing the odds on the over-under. But Vegas is betting specifically on the money line. They're betting, FanDuel's betting $3 million to win $4 million on the Clippers. So that's why I'm interested in taking the house, because the house almost never loses. They wouldn't be operating still if they were losing money all the time. That's why they make strategic bets like this. They make strategic plays on certain teams. And when they're more confident, they'll make a bigger bet, whatever that may look like. Now, they've lost quite a bit on the NBA playoffs, but the ones I've seen, they've won bunches of money. And I've started paying attention to that now, where how much is Vegas betting on this underdog? And if I roll with that underdog, I can say, like, Vegas never loses after the fact, or the house always wins, whatever that idea is. And they've lost quite a bit this playoffs. But still, they're rolling with the Clippers, It makes me feel even better because it's confirmation bias that I think the Clippers can come back and win this series. Like, they've done the hard work. This should be the easiest of the three to win. Game six should be the easiest of the three to win. They've done the dirty work in game five. Game six is on their home floor. In game seven, anything can happen. So one game sample size, the case-by-case basis, you learn nothing from the past. It's just a one-game winner-go-home, one-game sample size. So Vegas is betting on the Clippers tonight, and I am betting on the Clippers tonight. We can lock it in. The Clippers are going to beat the Phoenix Suns tonight in Game 6. If you're listening to this on Friday or you're listening to this on Saturday, or if you're listening to this on Sunday, first of all, thank you for stopping in to Open Talk Radio or YouTube. But secondarily, you can find out whether or not my analysis was right, or if we just spent 10 minutes gas bagging and explaining Vegas odds for Vegas to lose. One of the two. I'm content either way. Let's tap back into this Tampa Bay-Washington game real quick, because Randy Arozarena, running the Macarena, but they turned it into a Rosarena. That was a really good song during the playoffs last year. Playoff hero Randy Arozarena is at the plate for Tampa Bay with the bases loaded and two outs against John Lester. Score 2-2 here in the second. Two outs, second inning. strike one delivered to Randy Arozarena. Running around the bases, he's up fast as a hyena. Arozarena. Aye! And Arozarena. Oh, by the way, if Arozarena gets a hit or a walk right now, we get Wander Franco coming up again, which is just going to be awesome. Ball outside, 1-1 to Randy Arozarena. Yeah, 40 pitches already for John Lester, so he's definitely behind his count. But also, he's getting rocked kind of early, so you kind of expect the number to be up there a little bit. Tampa Bay's scored no runs this inning. They got two last inning. We mentioned the Yandy homer as Arozarena pops one up in a shallow right field. Coming in is Juan Soto. Soto will make the catch, and no Wander Franco here on the Take It Easy radio show. The catch is made. John Lester gets out of a bases-loaded jam, ladies and gentlemen. He got out of the jam. Well done by Mr. John Lester. Let's talk hockey, shall we? Because if I remember correctly, I believe tonight is Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. It is indeed Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals here tonight as the Tampa Bay Lightning win what should be, just like last year, a run-through of the Stanley Cup Final. And I was talking about this yesterday with our buddy Cam from Daily Sports Dosage, which, by the way, you can check out the DSD podcast now wherever it is that you get podcasts. But I was talking about this the other day about we do not really give – we do – our interest in hockey dies out once we get deeper into the playoffs. I was really glad that he brought that up because I was trying to figure out why have I not been able to stay super interested in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far. And last year was kind of a similar situation where Tampa Bay was the dominant team. This is their era of hockey is right now. Tampa Bay's great era of hockey exists right now. They are the team of this era. And Tampa Bay finds themselves three games away. Really, they can win tonight and start closing it out. But they are three wins away from winning their back-to-back Stanley Cup final, the dominant team of this era, which is kind of weird also. For all of the randomness in hockey and crazy runs like the Montreal Canadiens, who are now like the Cinderella darling story. And I haven't watched them as much as I would have liked to, but if you would have said at the start of the playoffs, who's the team, like, list the teams 1 through 16. Who's the most likely to win the Stanley Cup? The Canadiens would have been either 15 or 16. Fourth seed in the North Division, probably the weakest division, and they were playing down 3-1 to Toronto. They were down 3-1 in their series. Come back to win that. Sweep the Winnipeg Jets. Win in six against Vegas, which, by the way, Winnipeg, it's like, okay. Vegas has no excuse for losing that series. That was just a sad collapse by the Vegas Golden Knights. Obviously, Montreal's played awesome. Montreal didn't win because Vegas collapsed. Like, Montreal outplayed them. But the idea that Montreal outplayed Vegas, given what happened, you know, in the regular season, is absolutely insane. But yeah, Montreal's this fun story that's probably going to lose to Tampa Bay. And what I was going to say right before that is for all of the crazy upsets that we have in hockey where, you know, number one seeds get swept by eight seeds all the time. I shouldn't say all the time. It happened like three times in the last 3 years. But the idea that like eight seeds can sweep one seed doesn't exist in the NBA. And so the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to win the Stanley Cup final for the second year in a row. At least they should. It would be like shocking if they don't. There's weird upsets all the time. The Blues beating the Bruins was a similar situation. But what I was going to say right before that, before getting sidetracked twice, for all of the upsets that hockey has, there's a lot of repeat champions compared to the NBA, to MLB, to NFL. There's a lot of repeat champions in hockey, and it's a rather strange phenomenon that I hadn't really considered, where you get like three in 5 years for the Blackhawks, or two in a row for the Penguins, and two in a row for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, you have dynasties in hockey that you wouldn't expect to have, because given how random a lot of the results are in hockey. And so for the Tampa Bay Lightning. They should win the Stanley Cup final. They're an even better team than last year, which is quite remarkable how dominant Tampa Bay has been. And they, I mean, tonight's the night if you're Montreal. You're down in Florida. You can steal a game and get back exactly the way you wanted. You got smacked in game one. Carey Price, who's, you know, future Hall of Famer, but he's been kind of average for a few years now. Carey Price, stud goalie in the playoffs, standing on a head, and hot goalie can always be like a precursor for success in hockey. It's how, you know, 15 seeds or 7 or 8 seeds make Stanley Cup finals runs. Is hot goalie, you can win in small sample sizes. If you have a hot goalie, you can win in hockey. Jordan Binnington for the St. Louis Blues was a rookie and won the Stanley Cup final in 2019. Varlamov for the New York Islanders, who was a backup, comes in, becomes hot goalie for Tampa, for the New York Islanders. Forgot the name of the Dallas Stars goalie, but last year he was the same case where, you know, backup goalie came in for Ben Bishop, was their starting goalie, and he ended up having an amazing playoff run. Anton Khudobin was their goalie last year. He was fantastic. The Dallas Stars missed the playoffs. They went 6 games in the Stanley Cup final last year, and they missed the playoffs. So it's just that same idea where hot goalie, you can have a lot of success in the playoffs. And Montreal got that hot goalie. They had a star player that was playing awesome early on in the season. And he, I forgot his name now because I haven't watched enough of them yet. It made me upset. But anyways, there is a fantastic, fantastic, there's a fantastic opportunity was where I was trying to go. But now that I think about it, it's like it might not be as excellent an opportunity as we might have thought in the beginning for the Montreal Canadiens. Because, yes, you can get it to 1-1, but it would be, you know, shocking if they win 3 straight against Tampa Bay. It'd be shocking if they win 2 straight against Tampa Bay, even on their home ice. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what they end up doing from this point forward, because they're obviously down in the series and because they got smacked in the last game. But maybe this is the time where the old adage of one game at a time might end up being quite well, working out quite well for the old Montreal Canadiens, and just get one game and then see if momentum shifts or something crazy like that. But game 2 Stanley Cup final tonight should be interesting to see down there in Hockey Town, USA, Tampa Bay, Florida. Lots of love to that. San Diego Padres won 10 of their last 11 games, but also the Dodgers have won 5 straight, so they are progressing to the mean on the San Francisco Giants. So let's watch back in here, Tampa Bay and Washington. John Lester retakes the mound, and we got Mr. Future Stud, who's hitting 148 on a small sample size, Wander Franco, the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's check in with Wander Franco's second at-bat of the day that we were hoping he would get with bases loaded, but he'll start off the inning here as Washington goes on a win streak just to keep pace in that terrible NL East, because now they got to play Dodgers. They have to play the 3 best teams in the National League for like 16 or 15 straight games. They got Dodgers, Padres, Giants, Padres across their next 15 games. So that's where Washington should once again fade to the blackness a little bit, or at least fade to the mediocrity that they've been in. Since we did a story on them last year on Wired Up, which you can check out over on the Take It Easy podcast feed. You probably won't be able to check that one out. But you know what? Maybe I'll include a link to it here in the YouTube description. So if you're listening on Open Talk, maybe not there. As ball one comes into Franco down low. He's drawn some walks this year, so that's been a good sight for Wander Franco. The 1-0 pitch is taken for ball two. So 2-0 is the count for Tampa Bay, and their number 3 hitting shortstop, future of the MLB, future top best prospect, right up there with Vlad Jr. and Fernando Tatis, the closest thing to a can't miss that there is. Swings and misses as John Lester takes the top off with a nice little backdoor slider. Now 2-1. has a swing and a miss by Wander Franco on 2-0. Franco, 2-1 pitch on the way. Lines one into center field. Wander Franco has himself a line drive base hit. Absolutely smoked that one into center field. Wander Franco, how do you do? How do you do right there? Single right there is going to bring up Yandy Diaz, who just knocked one way out of the park on the at-bat. Just on the previous at-bat we were talking about where we cut out and cut back in, he absolutely hit a rocket of a home run last time around. So let's see what we've got here for Yandy Diaz. Ball one down low there. All right, and now pitch inside, 2-0 is the count to Yandy Diaz right there as he steps out of the box. Yandy Diaz, former Cleveland Indian, who I forgot which trade he was acquired. Oh, he was in that Will Myers trade, I think. Yeah, so Will Myers is traded. I was looking this up the other day. Will Myers was traded from the Rays to the Padres like 7 years ago. He's been a Padre ever since. One of the longest tenured Padres in history, Will Myers has been. And Tampa Bay ended up getting Jake Bowers from that trade, which they then flipped for Yandy Diaz. And Yandy Diaz has been, you know, he was great. He had a coming out party in the 2019 wild card against the Oakland A's. He hit a big home run to help the Rays advance. And Yandy Diaz has been a consistent part of their lineup ever since, even if his numbers are down this year to a 688 OPS. But Yandy Diaz has been fantastic for the Rays, so that's where that came from, just as a fun side note, as Diaz takes the 3-0 pitch for strike number one. See what Lester has back at him here. Lester's also the guy who doesn't pick over, so we'll find out if Franco's got some real speed, maybe, if he tests John Lester a bit. 3-1 in there for strike two to Yandy Diaz, and the count now goes full 3-2 to the Tampa Bay Rays. 2-2 game here in the third inning between Tampa Bay and the Washington Nationals, who are staving off mediocrity for as long as they can. Even though they're second in the division, they have like a negative 10 run differential as Diaz pops one way foul. It was a hit and run by Wander Franco on the 3-2. So Franco will head back to first base, and Yandy Diaz will hit once again. 3-2 count, seventh pitch on the way from Lester. We mentioned Lester's pitch count earlier. He's at 51 right now. It's early in the third inning. My general rule is like take the inning and add one number to it. So if you're in the third inning, you should be in the 40s, fourth inning 50s, et cetera, et cetera. 3-2 on the way is a guide ball to right field by Diaz, caught by Juan Soto for out number one. So this will bring up G-Man Choi for the Tampa Bay Rays. Not much going here. We got like 5 minutes left here on the Take It Easy radio show here this week. So I think we'll close it out, at least Wednesday's show, with some Tampa Bay Washington here. How about that? No Padres this afternoon. Let's enjoy some Tampa Bay and Washington here as the G-Man steps up into the box for the Tampa Bay Rays. G-Man is actually hitting the best in the lineup today, yeah. I mean, except for the pitcher who just got a single in his last at-bat. G-Man's been the best hitter this year for Tampa Bay. Fakes a bunt, steal by Franco. Franco is in at second base with a stolen bag. Ball gets by Castro into center field. Throw is a little short by former All-Star Yan Gomes, who is still collecting those ridiculous paychecks from the Washington Nationals, as he now becomes like a backup level catcher. As Franco, Franco does have some speed. Mr. Five-tool player does have some speed in there. Now, he probably would have been thrown out had Castro caught the ball, but Wander was off and running, so they sent him stealing on that one, and Wander Franco has himself a stolen base here in the second inning. 5-tool phenom, best prospect in baseball that I'm watching closely for the first time, apart from that highlight of his home run. As G-Man Choi grounds one over to first, stabbed by Josh Bell, runs it over to the bag himself for out number two. And now Wander Franco advances to third as Mike Zunino comes up to the plate. One of the better hitting catchers. We have jokes like pitchers who rake, and the other thing as I say is catchers with wheels. But, you know, a lot of catchers are there for their defensive skills. Like, catchers can make 10-year careers out of not hitting very well because the defensive skill is so valuable. A great defensive catcher can save more runs than a center fielder, which, you know, would make sense in a lot of cases as strike one comes into Mike Zunino. But Mike Zunino is one of the better hitting catchers for sure. He's got like 17 home runs already this year. He's only hitting 206, but he hits for a ton of power. He's one of those three true outcome guys, which is rare at the catcher position. Like, you know, Buster Posey's a great hitting catcher, but he hits for averages. Curveball drops in for ball number one, dropped in the dirt, I should say. But yeah, so Mike Zunino, catchers who rake. Not as many of them anymore. I don't know if there ever were, to be honest. I just recognize it's just a trend that I realized like 4 years ago. It was like, hey, all these catchers kind of suck at hitting. As the 1-1 is on the way, and it is ball two to Mike Zunino. But at the same time, like, I mean, I've always known, like, catchers have been, like, usually the seven hitters on most teams or eight hitters. So it's not, like, out of the it's like, oh, my gosh, this catcher. What happened to all the great hitting catchers? They're just – you can be better defensively. As Zunino skies one down the left field line, it is gone if it's fair. It is gone. Mike Zunino, home run number 18 on the season. I'm guessing that leads all catchers because not many players that have 20 home runs this year. Mike Zunino drives one out of the ballpark. The Rays take a 4-2 lead in the third inning, and how about that as a way to close out this hour on the Take It Easy radio show. Shout out to everyone tuning in on YouTube. Thanks again. Have a fantastic day. And for those of you still tuning in here on Open Talk Radio 313, The Flash, thank you. It's been an absolutely wonderful day here. And check out all of our work over on the Take It Easy podcast, as well as Comical Sports Memes Take It Easy podcast, the YouTube channel, as we mentioned before. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Double episode this week here on Open Talk. So we will see you then, everybody.